Good afternoon. If I were a running back, I'd definitely go for the hole on the right side. Sorry, yeah, but maybe I could outrun you and I'd be safe. Oh, thanks, John. First, I want to acknowledge the co-authors on this effort, and it's kind of interesting how research takes place because it does depend on relationships, too. I had actually gone to Iowa State when Laura was having her PhD defense, and I stopped in to see some folks at the National TILF Lab, and Tom came down the hall, and I had some of these ideas that I'm going to present this morning. And he said, oh, I'd kind of be interested in getting involved, and so that's how we got involved. And then Rod Ventera is my colleague in St. Paul in the room next to me, and this is the first chance that we had to work together. He's a gas expert. So we got the gas and the water together on this thing. So it's a joint team effort, and I want to acknowledge that right away. We are attending an international meeting here today, and there are people from all over. But I recognize that most of the bioreactor research has been done south of the border. And you kind of wonder, well, which border are we talking about here, on the North American continent or what? And actually, the border that I'm talking about is between Minnesota and Iowa. If you know anything about it, there's some rivalry between the two. But I wanted to extend this. It extends to Canada. Of course, Iowa, Illinois, they've done a lot of the work. But we've got Louis here. He's from New Zealand. He's way south of that border. So I think it holds true today, too. But really, what we have, and we saw a little bit of it in Lowell's presentation, is water temperature in the spring. And these are some photos of a monitoring study that we have out in west central Minnesota. This was right around the equinox in 2011. A big flush of water came out. Can you imagine where that red oval there, what do you think the water temperature was? You know, it was probably 1 degree centigrade or so. So we're interested in this study. And this is a lab study that I'll be talking about here. The objectives were to compare ag residues to wood chips in terms of denitrification performance, also the availability of these things. Now, you saw in the South Dakota and the Illinois presentations, piles of wood chips. How far do you think they had to truck to get those things there? It could be a ways. There's something very appealing about taking something that comes from the edge of the, or in the field, and just moving it over to the into the bioreactor. But there's also the issue of cost, and I'll touch on that too at the end. We were focusing on cold temperatures and testing unique combinations that would have some promise under those springtime snowmelt conditions. Now, this study was the predecessors to MARTA's, and we did use a half-meter PVC upflow columns to do the test. And as I mentioned, we've got collaboration here with a microbial community population and composition testing, as well as looking at the dissolved gas production in each of the treatments. Now I'm going to report on five of the treatments here in this presentation. They were replicated three times each. We had wood chips as a standard, corn cobs or maize cobs, depending on your preference, barley straw, which was shredded. By the way, these are materials readily available in Minnesota. Corn stover, again shredded, large rolled up bales. And finally, we did a combination of corn cobs first in series with wood chips. I had a reason for doing that. Why? Oh yeah. Here, these are the chambers that we were working in. And these two gals, their names are Taylor and Liz, and if you flip them around and you're an old movie buff, you'll understand how unique that is. They figured that out several weeks before I did. The test parameters here, we put a high loading of nitrate at these things so we could separate the treatments. 50 ppm of nitrate. We used a residence time of 12 hours. That's pushing it pretty good, but I see from the field studies that water can move even quicker through these things, but there is a realism of the amount of water that we are having to mix and deal with. So these are the conditions that we used. We ran for about 6 months at 16 degrees C, which is a typical ground temperature in the summertime. And then we took the columns apart. Tom came up, sampled for biota, repacked with new materials, and started up again and ran for 6 more months at 2 degrees C. Now, the gals are doing the gas sampling every 4 weeks on Thursday. Everybody grabbed their parkas, and we actually did this in the winter, so it wasn't too much colder. Or actually, it was warmer in there than outside. But we sampled water at the quarter, half, and three-quarter, and then at the outlet. And it's really weird. I don't know if anyone here has ever dealt with dissolved gas. I see one guy has from Pennsylvania, but it's pretty weird. You put the water into a little vial and let the head space equilibrate, and then you draw off the atmosphere or whatever. You know, you assume it's there. You can't touch it. You can't see it. You can't smell it. And you put it in another vial and hand it to Rod's group, and they do the GC analysis. For the first run, I've chosen a period of time here, roughly 5 weeks, I think, where things were quite stable. This was about 70 days after startup. You see the inlet concentration there bobbling around 50. And very interestingly, the wood chip concentration didn't drop that much. And you can see on down to corn cobs having removed the most nitrate. So this shows then, look at the scale here, not a lot of reduction at 2 degrees C, which we probably would have guessed. But again, kind of wood chips, not as much, corn cobs the most. Now I'll show tabular results of this in terms of the nitrate N removal rate in grams of N per day per cubic meter. In the initial startup phase, which would have been after about a month, you see the green boxes there and the wood chips, 5.6, maybe that's not too unrealistic really. And all the ag materials performing at a higher rate. Then if we look at this more stable period a little bit later on, you can see the wood chips dropped off, and don't really know why that happened. There were some actual flushing or something where the nitrate level was actually a little higher out than going in. And you'd think that might be a chunk of something floating out of a column, but all three columns would have a negative rate at that time. So I'm not really sure what happened to wood chips there. But there are some interesting things to look at. After 6 weeks already, the corn stover and barley straw were losing their ability to denitrify. And this is nothing new. There's a paper out there on wheat straw where the authors had to keep feeding wheat straw into the system to keep it going. So, but if we look at the corn cobs, the corn cob treatments were holding fairly steady. Now, in the second run at the colder temperature, you can see, first of all, the rates were about 3 to 5 times lower than they were at the warmer temperature. One thing is interesting, though, is that corn cobs had a higher rate even at the cold temperature than wood chips did at the warmer temperature. So we'll talk a little bit about microbiology right here. The black columns represent the warm results, and this is the population of the genes for going from nitrous oxide to nitrogen gas. And you can see basically that all the ag residues, which corn cobs, stover, and barley straw, the first three on the left, were significantly more than the wood chips. I guess that makes sense. And also then, under the cold run, corn stover was significantly different than wood chips. The other two were kind of intermediate, but Tom has some other things that he's working on too. So a couple slides on the dissolved gas. We looked at methane, carbon dioxide, and nitrous oxide. I'm just presenting the nitrous oxide. And interesting thing here is if you look at the blue, blue dotted line down here, that was the inlet nitrous oxide. There was hardly anything in there. And so there was some production of nitrous oxide, and especially if you look at these two treatments here, the barley straw and the corn stover, which are the ones which were losing their ability to denitrify, were actually starting to produce more nitrous oxide. And under the cold conditions, the scales are the same here. But those two treatments, again, we're showing some production of dissolved gases in the system. Now, in this project, we looked not at not just at the biological activity, but also at the hydraulic conductivity. If we wanted to use an agricultural residue, it would have to have somewhat similar characteristics to wood chips, or we'll have to adjust the design of the bioreactor. So we built this mega permeameter that was large enough to put corn cobs in and not orient them. And so we had a lot of student help to do this. Here are the results. Over on the right-hand side, you can see wood chips at the top, about 4.5 centimeters per second. Not statistically different from the ag residues, but the ag residues not as high conductivity ratings. And so that's something to keep track of. A little bit on economics then. We followed the paper Christensen, you see there et al. In 2013. They did some comparison of 7 different nitrate reduction strategies, one of them being bioreactors. They made some assumptions, which I see were similar to other assumptions that I saw, 40-year life, medium replacement after 20 years. And so we chose the corn cobs that have the higher denitrification rate, same length of time. We don't really know. No, I don't think anybody's put corn cobs in the field. We have one study, I think, in New Zealand where they were 22, 24 months or so, looked like they were operating. So we just took an educated guess of 4 years replacement and then followed the same logic that was used in that published paper. And so the assumptions made in that paper was based on Iowa of an annual nitrate loading of 28 pounds of nitrate lost per acre per year, which seems realistic, I guess, with about a 38% reduction in the nitrate load, which yielded a cost per pound of N removed, kind of a minimum maximum range you see there, average of about 90 cents. I see that's a little bit lower than, Mark, I think you had about $1.34, 38, something like that. So you're looking more at the high end there. But using the same assumptions then, load and amount of nitrate removed, we plugged this in, and for corn cobs, that's the range we got. And the minimum there would represent free corn cobs, which probably isn't realistic. It costs something to collect them. The high end there is based on $87 per ton, which is the biofuel cost for corn cobs in western Minnesota. But if the denitrification rate is greater, we should be able to design a bioreactor that might take more of the nitrate out for a given size. And so if we assume that we could remove 90 or 50% of the nitrate, that would reduce that cost per pound a little bit. So in conclusion, the agricultural residues support a higher nitrate and removal rate than wood chips, particularly at the low temperatures just above freezing. They do support a higher population of denitrifiers. And the economics of using these things are more uncertain because there's more unknowns, for sure. But the research supports an attempt, at least, to design a higher performing system with ag residues. So I'd like to acknowledge my technician, which Marta did too, Todd Schumacher. You can imagine, and the students, Taylor, Liz, and Noah, keeping this thing going for a year. They were in on the weekends and everything. We had chores to do. The bugs have to be fed and diapers changed, etc. These pictures here, I'll just mention, the one on the left is 4 years ago. It was a field installation put in and about 100 miles west of the cities. Very long, too long of a bioreactor. And then the picture on the right was 4 weeks ago, where we've dissected that and built 8 replicated bioreactors, and we're excited about applying some treatments to that next year. Thank you. Yep, I know exactly where the wood chips. The question is, where did the wood chips come from? The wood chips were green ash, and they were in a tree right outside the soil science building because we didn't buy the wood chips, you know, before fall, and then the places to buy the wood chips are snowed under and so forth. So the university chipped down one of those green ash trees in fear of ash borer. And so we had them take the cleanest stuff, and we had totes of them. We dried them, we oven dried them, and then we soaked, you know, we treated them just like everything else. We dried, we weighed, we soaked.
So how do you think that would compare to mixed species that you might sort of the urban general? I mean,
yeah,
that
I think, Marta, yours are a mixture, right? We have oak and maple in Marta's, and the rates are higher than this one. There's something weird that happened. We don't know if they tried to treat the tree, you know, for green ash.
Grandma.
And there was residual pesticide in there. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you care to theorize why the corn cobs are working better, and do you intend to investigate that?
Well, the corn cobs, you know, other people have shown that they work better, too. The carbon is more available. You know, there's more quicker release availability to the bugs. And in fact, Laura and I have put together a proposal that we gave to MDA, and we haven't been able to fund it, but we've got a plan to try to use these. You can't probably use them just the same way, but there's got to be a way to use them maybe in a modular format or so to take advantage of the higher nitrate removal rate.
Okay.